ladies and gentlemen, it's time for movies. It's time for music. It's time for Mo Kelly.
KFI AM 640. Bill Handel here. The announcement that the president is making about the retirement of Justice Breyer is happening right now at the White House. But I don't think we're going to carry it because what we're going to do is hear he's been wonderful. He's terrific. Look at his record. And you can't do better than Justice Breyer. And that's what we're going to get. And then I think Justice Breyer is going to come out also. He's scheduled. And he'll come out and say, it's been wonderful. It's been terrific. It's been an honor. I've just written it for them. They don't have to say anything anymore.
Where's They're your done. Check?
Mo Kelly is with us with entertainment news we do every week. Mo is heard Saturday and Sundays from 6 to 8 p.m. here on KFI with the strangely named The Mo Kelly Show. And he's at Mr. Mo Kelly is his social handle. Mo, good morning.
Good morning, Bill. It's always good to see you.
Yes, it is. Now, let's get right into some of these topics. There's a new Bill Cosby docuseries, and there is so much drama to that.
Yeah.
So let's get into that.
W. Kamau Bell, who is a stand-up comedian in his own right and also a political commentator in many ways. He does a lot of work with CNN. He put this documentary together, but specifically looking at how African-American attitudes have changed about Bill Cosby over time and why some people still cling to him, determined to defend him, and also looking at the totality of the allegations and how people are refusing to see things for what they are.
Quick question is, and I understand Camille Cosby saying, my husband is innocent, never do it, never did it, and then the reversal, letting him out of jail on those technical grounds, having to do with how many witnesses were produced. And so she says it's vindication, he's innocent. Now, those people that are backing him up, how do you argue with 80 women saying that they were abused by Bill Cosby? Are they all liars? I mean, what is the position? You've talked to these people.
Yeah, a lot of people believe just that they want to take down Bill Cosby. Let's give some context. Bill Cosby won 3 consecutive Emmys in the 1960s for I Spy. That was unheard of. It was during the height of the Civil Rights Movement. At one point during the 1970s and 80s, he had 3 different TV shows between Picture Pages, The Cosby Show, and also Fat Albert. He was a movie star in the black community first before he was just a mainstream phenomenon. He was beloved because he was able to go in places and spaces that no one could even before him. And he was just, he was renowned in every way. He was world famous. And so when people in their minds come out 30 and 40 years later to allege that Bill was doing X, Y, and Z prior to that, people are just resistant to it, regardless of how many facts you may offer them. Now, within the entertainment community, it was kind of well known that Bill was doing things of this nature. But if you look at the context of just general history, we did not even have a terminology for date rape or acquaintance rape until early 1990. So not only did we have to evolve as a society, but we had to look at what we believe Bill Cosby to be in a different context. And that has evolved. And that's what the documentary is about.
And I'm assuming if it's going to be somewhat objective, yeah, I have to assume that it's pretty anti-Bill Cosby following his rise and fall.
They're playing actual videos from his comedic routines for different media commentators, people who may not have seen them, people who may have known him over the years. And they're looking at where they say in the trailer that he actually dropped breadcrumbs as far as what he thought about women, what he thought about relationships and so forth.
Now, you knew him, right?
I wouldn't say I knew him, but
you met him on many occasions.
Many occasions. Many occasions. He is a very proud, some would say arrogant man.
Okay.
He uses a lot of profanity in real life, which belies what he did as a comedian. But part of it was people liked the idea of Bill Cosby, but they didn't know who he was as a person. And when you got to see more of his views on social issues, that's when it started to change.
The story that you gave me, which I think says it all about Bill Cosby, where my opinion, and this is, I think it was ancillary to all the problems he's having, is the fact that he got his PhD from Temple University.
Yes.
And it was about as BS a degree as you could get, that he provided video or maybe that, you know, he
wasn't as stringent as other, you know, doctor of philosophy programs might have been.
And he insisted on being called Dr. Cosby?
Absolutely. If you address him, it better be Dr. Cosby.
That is so pompous.
But it's even in the credits, if you look at the Cosby Show, he was like the advisor to the show, you know, Dr. Cosby, EDD.
Oh,
so
I didn't.
So he had to put it in the credits. Absolutely.
Yeah, I didn't notice that. That's just terrific. So which way do you think this documentary is going to go? Scathing?
It's going to be scathing. It's going to be absolutely scathing. It's going to be condemnation. And it's going to ask the question, why are we still holding on to the idea of Bill Cosby, the entertainer, or Heathcliff Huxtable and how he presented himself to America writ large, as opposed to Bill Cosby, the sexual predator?
And one quick question about the show itself, the Bill Cosby Show. Was the part of Dr. Huxtable written for him, or did they cast him later?
No, he wrote that. That was part of his strength and also the power he had in Hollywood. That was his show developed around his comedy routines. He chose all the characters. He had complete autonomy.
Okay. Reboots and legacy sequels.
Yeah.
Is the only guarantee today in movies, the superhero movies that are all sequels, where a studio spends $200 million and knows it's going to get its money back and make some money?
Well, it's not the only one. And actually, the superhero movies, by and large, they don't have what they call good multipliers. In other words, if it's going to cost $200 million to do a superhero movie, a good one, there's no guarantee that it's going to bring you back $400 or $600 million. It may bring you $350, so you're not even getting a multiplier of two. But if you do a movie like Scream for $20 million and it brings you back $150 million, well, you got a multiplier of 7+. So there are different reasons for doing sequels, but it's not just superhero movies. Part of the allure for many of the companies is they already own the IP. And if you're smart, if you're really smart, you'll film the movie and maybe a sequel at the same time. Talk about superhero movies. They filmed Avengers Infinity War and also Endgame back to back. Why? Because you have all those actors together at the same time. Their schedules are cleared. They did Matrix Reloaded and Matrix Revolutions, which is Matrix 2 and 3, at the same time. And most of these contracts now, they're writing in sequel stipulations into the actors' contracts where they know that, yes, we know this is going to be a hit. And in the next movie, you have this type of added benefits,
right,
or whatever.
That makes sense. Same sets, same actors, different script. And so instead of a 30-day shoot, it becomes a 60-day shoot.
Right. Right. And from a cost-benefit analysis perspective, it makes sense for the studios.
Sure.
You probably get the actors at a lower rate than after waiting for a movie to become a huge success and having to renegotiate for that next sequel.
Yeah, when did I know Lord of the Rings did that.
Lord of the Rings, yes, as well. Look at you, Bill.
Hey. I'm the maven here.
All right.
Yeah, and then now this is just a regular feature, but they don't do it with new. Well, they did. Peter Jackson did it with Lord of the Rings, which had not been filmed before.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of understood. If they have any visions of it being a big blockbuster hit, not only do you want to lock in the actors, but you want to make sure that everything is in place for the sequel. That's why they're buying up all these smaller properties and putting them on Netflix or whatever, so they can have the continuous rights they're going there for.
Obviously a movie that you spend $50, $60 million, and it's hard to believe that that is a fairly low-budget movie these days.
It is, though.
I mean, that's crazy, isn't it? Here's a quick story. Psycho was made for under $1 million. It was made for about nine. Here's a little factoid, which you may not know, and it's just a stupid factoid, but it was actually a bet. Alfred Hitchcock had a wager going that he could make a movie for $900,000. Which is equivalent to maybe $13, $14 million or $12 million today with big actors.
Mm-hmm.
He was able to do it. And look what happened with Psycho.
But not only that, the larger industry, if you think about the slasher film, they have not strayed from that formula or also that economic sense where they're not spending a lot of money on the movie itself, but they know it will have a tremendous ROI on the back end.
Yeah, so is that another guarantee? You take a franchise, you take Scream, for example, and you're going to spend relatively little money on it to make it a sequel. Do you look at hundreds of millions of dollars, or that would be complete lightning in a bottle, as opposed to a superhero movie, an Avengers movie, where you know it's going to be in the hundreds of millions of dollars?
Yeah, I can't think of a a slasher movie, my term, which has cost more than $100 million to make. They are going to make money. They're not going to lose money, if only because the audience is so loyal and baked in. You can make those movies for under $30 million, and you know you're going to get most of that money back if it's well marketed in the first weekend, saying nothing of after it goes to digital download.
Yeah. You know, what was the movie I was thinking of for a moment? Oh, Blair Witch Project. And that was made for like
$5.
Yeah, literally. And all of a sudden, it costs more to do redo the post-production.
Yeah.
To re-edit it than it did to actually film it.
They filmed it on a lark. I don't know what the actual money was, but it was under $1 million, that's for sure. And it made more than $100 million, if I'm not mistaken.
I know, it's just absolutely crazy. Who was the studio that did that? I was just reading about when Eisner got kicked out of obviously ABC and Disney. And he, I don't remember, but they ended up with 12.5% distribution because, Disney would not fund the movie.
But it also changed the industry going forward, because that was the first movie where they had this shaky cam found footage type movie where you find,
this is the Blair Witch Project.
Blair Witch Project. And you actually find some footage and you go back and you relive those incidents.
All right. Thanks, Mo. Greatly appreciated, obviously, Saturday and Sunday, 6 to 8 p.m. right here on KFI.